Hi, buddy. Welcome to a Thursday edition Bulldog Hour. Captain Gonzo alongside here as always until 3, and then CG and Gonzo will bring you to 6 o'clock. Have Sharks hockey tonight. Lakers are off tonight. Fresno State, both men's and women's basketball, getting ready for the weekend. The men will be on the road first in Laramie and then around the bend in midweek next week in Fort Collins. A tough road trip, even though the Cowboys aren't playing that well. It's always tough, as I was talking to Q yesterday. 72-20 is the elevation there, and they'll remind you about it the minute that you step into the arena. We'll see how the Bulldogs do. For the women, again last night, the same thing we have seen over and over again. They wait until the fourth quarter, and then they make the big run, and they come back to win. It happened again in San Diego, so Jamie White's team continues undefeated, and now they come home in the reciprocal schedule to play Wyoming and Colorado State while the men are on the road. So we'll see. This is promising right now to be a great finish for the women's team. One more time, though, and I will talk basketball with Daryl in the second half of the hour. Andrew up in just a moment. It's going to take winning the conference tourney almost assuredly to get the Fresno State women's team back to the NC2As where they haven't been in a while, and that is because this conference is not that high profile across the country on the women's side. So we'll see how it plays out. I hope people go out to SMC to watch the women's team over the weekend, and stay tuned for the men. Paul and Q will be in the glamorous confines of Laramie, Wyoming, and I know looking forward to it. All right, want to talk to our good friend Andrew Martin, 2447 Sports Director, your conduit to the Olympics, to the World Series, to the Super Bowl, to figure skating, to candlepin bowling, to horseshoes in the middle of the country, and most importantly, Bulldog Insider, 6 o'clock on Channel 24. Andrew will be back on the normal Tuesday circuit with us beginning next week. Andrew, how you doing, my friend?
Doing well, Tony. Don't connect me with the World Series if it's tainted, please.
Yeah, well, look, you're a Yankee fan, and I'm going to ask you very quickly about this. I have a bunch of emails. CG and I got through a little bit yesterday. We will get through more, or we hope to anyway, in the 3 o'clock hour tomorrow. And I'll talk football with Marcus, mainly about the NFL and Devontae Adams and all that stuff tomorrow as well. But, Andrew, the one thing that has been touched upon, and since you are a Yankee fan, you can elaborate quickly on this. Our good friend Jonathan had emailed in, and it said, look, he's a big-time Dodger fan. There's a lot of big-time Dodger fans around this area, as you're well aware. And he said, I'm not suggesting the Dodgers should be handed the World Series title in 2017, but he did believe that the Astros should vacate the thing. And one of the things I think that backs that kind of point of view up is CC Sabathia saying, you know what? Before you talk about the Dodgers being cheated by the Astros, how about us Yankees? We were cheated in the league championship opportunity. So do you go that far to say you could not, you want to vacate, that's fine, but you could not anoint the Dodgers or anybody else champion without taking into account who might have been beaten earlier in the playoffs with this same routine of sign stealing going on?
You know, it's really, really tough because I really understand where everybody's coming from. In my opinion, the Astros cheated. They did something that they knew was wrong, and they finally got caught for it. Giving a $5 million fine to a Major League Baseball organization is not even a slap on the wrist. I mean, that's pocket change to an organization. Obviously, firing the GM, firing the manager had to happen, and, you know, Alex Cora got fired, and today I saw the Mets parted ways with Carlos Beltran. All right. That needs to happen. But if the Astros are allowed to keep that title, then the owner gets to say, you know what? This is just a blip, you know, in our history, and 10 years from now, 20 years from now, 30 years from now, we will still be World Series champions in 2017. So I would have no problem if Major League Baseball decided that it wanted to take away the championship from the Astros. But, yeah, you can't name the Dodgers or the Yankees or somebody else. You just leave it vacant. That's what I would do.
I think that's the fair view, and that's what Jonathan had said in his email yesterday. And one quick note before we move away from baseball for the time being. Andrew, you are correct. Not only the Astros, who had waited so long, painfully long, to win a World Series, and they might have won it anyway without doing that. That's the shame of it, right? The bottom line is the $5 million fine, yeah, it did cost A.J. Hinch and all the other guys their jobs. But as far as the organization goes, you're correct. They probably have generated 20 times that $5 million in ancillary value. So was it worth it? You bet. Would every other team do it? Probably they would. One more time, though. Sign stealing, there's nothing wrong with sign stealing. It's part of baseball. I said it yesterday. If you're standing at second base and you can pick up the catcher's signs, you're going to try to relay it to the batter. That's part of the game. It would not be part of the game, however, if you had some sort of technology with you at second base to do that. And that's the comparison. It wasn't the naked eye of somebody who was playing the game. Right. This was a well-orchestrated routine. I brought up the NASCAR stuff about, you know, if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying. You know, they've caught guys in NASCAR using jet fuel, Andrew. Jet fuel in the car during qualifying, all right? That's the subculture of an organization that started as bootleggers in the South trying to outrun the revenuers and the cops. That's how NASCAR got started. That's not how baseball was supposed to be. And even NASCAR has cleaned up their act a long time ago. So I'm with you. Vacate it. Asterisk is not enough. Vacate both titles and start again. And for the Red Sox, you know what? They've got enough titles from the earlier parts of the new millennium. For the Astros, it's tough to take after waiting that long, but you got to vacate it. I hope they do it. They probably won't.
Right. All right. Because Tony, ultimately, you're not just punishing the Astros by vacating the title. You were also sending a message to the other teams in Major League Baseball saying, if you guys do something, your punishment's going to be even harsher than this, because you have to lay the groundwork so something like this doesn't happen in the future. Now, a lot of people, and again, I know we want to get away from this, but a lot of people, including like the national media, have talked about how this potentially compares to the punishment for Pete Rose. I have been advocating for years that I think Pete Rose is one of the best players, great manager too, but one of the best players in our game's history, should be in Cooperstown, but, you know, his betting on baseball should be stamped on his plaque like a scarlet letter. Almost like, eventually, I think we all think Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens are going to get in, because you can't ignore an entire era of baseball, but it should be put on their plaque that these players, you know, played during the steroid era, and they were either accused of or proven to be cheaters. You got to stamp it on the plaque, and you got to put it out there as a warning to everybody else.
Fair enough, and we will move away, Yankee boy. I just wanted to give you the chance, and you're right, and guys like Bonds, I've said it before, this was a multiple MVP who didn't need to do it, and that's probably, I've said this before, and we will move away, I promise. Guys that had to cheat just to hang on to their career, while I still don't condone it, I do understand it. Guys like Bonds, who were blessed with the kind of talent that meant they were one of the best players in the league anyway, it was really an unnecessary ego grab to cheat beyond that. So, look, that's enough of that. We will get back to it. When you and I get to Tuesdays, this story is going to last a while, that's for sure, when we have the full hour. All right. Want to talk about Fresno State. The more cogent question beyond whether this basketball team can get it done, and I'll talk to Daryl about it today, three or four times. Q brought it up yesterday. He's probably right. It's going to be tough for this team to make it three nights only as far as what's going to be in front of them in Las Vegas in March, because they're going to have to get themselves in the top five to avoid that. That's going to be a tough move. We'll see what happens. The schedule is going to get easier for them the rest of the way in conference. Whether there's enough time or not and the team can coalesce, we'll find out. But, Andrew, the bigger question to me is, for a university, and you've brought this up on the Insider and with me, that looked at the renaissance across the board of the three major men's sports last year, football, as high as they have been in level after that Arizona State win and winning the championship. I'm talking about, guys, the 2018 season. Then what happened with basketball, 23 wins last year. Then baseball getting back to a regional, playing very respectably at Stanford. Andrew, how do you maintain interest now to June for Fresno State with football 4-8 put to bed until spring, basketball right now sputtering, and we don't know what happens with baseball? How do you keep the public's interest in the one team, Fresno State, the one entity that should be the unifying force throughout this valley?
Right. Well, it's obviously a lot tougher with the struggles that we've seen. I think right now they have an opportunity to capitalize on both the newness and the familiarity with Kalen DeBoer coming back, because, you know, he was the guy that Jeff Tedford wanted to take over. You know, Terry Toomey said that he was blown away by DeBoer in the interview process. And obviously, you know, some of the assistants are gone, but some of them are staying. And so, I mean, while you can theoretically get worse from 4-8, the assumption is that they'll keep this train rolling. And a lot of the young guys who had really, really good seasons and got a lot of experience as freshmen and sophomores will just be even better in 2020. So I think right now, from a university standpoint, you capitalize on the football team knowing that 4-8 was ideally just a blip on the radar. Unfortunately, the basketball program is not really stepping up right now, but like you said, it should get easier towards the back end of the season. We've seen some great performances, and I was really encouraged by the play of Jordan Campbell on Tuesday night. I thought, it's tough when they were hoping that they were going to get him a few games earlier than they did, and so he didn't have a strong game against New Mexico, but you clearly saw how talented he is. And to do that on national TV, to do that against a top 10 team, which, let's face it, San Diego State will be in the top 5 next week with Auburn, losing and now them being the only undefeated team left in the country. But it was going to be a tough test to beat San Diego State, and I think everybody knows that. I don't know what's going to happen in Laramie or at Colorado State next week. I mean, this team is struggling right now, but there are some pieces there. You know, we talked about how terrific the freshmen are. You know, Jared Heider hasn't been there. He missed some time, and obviously he's been struggling lately, but he's talented. Orlando Robinson has been, legitimate and solid this season. You know, Campbell's coming on. When they get some of the guys, back and completely healthy, I know Noah Blackwell obviously played a little bit on Tuesday. When all those guys get back into the fold, you'd like to think that Fresno State will have a cohesive unit and have at least a couple of weeks to prepare for that, stretch at the conference tournament. I'm not sold that Fresno State is at the point right now where the Bulldogs can get it done and cut down those nets. But if you start building, towards the future, using the freshmen that you currently have and the senior leadership to kind of, leave a mark on the program for next year and the years beyond, there's no reason why Fresno State can't turn things on right now and then at the very least set itself up for next season and for the future. In terms of baseball, Fresno State right now is, still kings of the Mountain West. Build that hype because the season hasn't quite started yet. Next weekend, you've got all the alumni festivities with the golf outing and then the alumni game, et cetera. And the program is home, I want to say, for its first like 12 games of the season. So plenty of opportunities to see the Fresno State baseball team at, Bob Bennett Stadium before the team hits the road. But there's no reason to think that program won't be strong again. I know losing Ryan Jensen is going to be tough. First round draft pick went to the Cubs. But, I mean, you got a lot of guys returning from last year's team that went to the NCAA tournament. So, and then the wrestling program, while we may or may not see an All-American, this season, Josh Hokett is still wrestling phenomenally. This program has won 3 duels in a row. I believe they're home for their next 4 duels. And so if I'm the university, I would market everything in that sense. I mean, you still have programs and individuals that are doing very good things. And you just mentioned a few minutes ago about the women's basketball team. I don't know if it's too early to assume that this team can theoretically go through conference play undefeated. I mean, when they play Boise State, we'll get a real sense of where this program is. But they did do that one time under Adrian Wiggins, and it was very, very impressive to see. It's tough to do that, especially when you're facing teams, 2 times, possibly 3 times if you see them again in the conference tournament. But that stretch under Adrian Wiggins, where they went, to 7 straight, or I guess his players with Reagan Peedley, but there was a stretch of 7 years where they went to 7 straight NCAA tournaments. There's no reason to think that they can't get back there this year. I mean, between Matty Udy and the Cavender twins, they are playing some phenomenal basketball right now. I actually had Udy in studio on Bulldog Insider on Sunday, and I said, how'd you keep winning these games? Because against New Mexico and against San Jose State, they were down by double digits late in the second half, and they came back to win those games. And I believe last night, too, they were down and came back to win towards the end as well. So they're winning these games, It hasn't hit them yet where they were unable to come back from one of those deficits. But yeah, the women's team is playing very well right now. So and with the men being gone for the next week and a half, like you said, go out to the Save Mart Center and support a team that's in first place in the conference. Plus, on Saturday, you've got the baby race, and that's always fun to see.
Yeah, and I'll ask Paul about this when I have a chance. Pat was supposed to be taking his hot dog narration, as only he can, to one of those baby races. They already had one. So I'm guessing, I mean, maybe I'm wrong, that Pat is going to be Mike's side. I don't know. You know what? I'll call L. Patrick Hill and ask him about it. How about that? Okay.
Well, I can tell you, Tony, that I am actually doing this one on Saturday.
So, okay. Well, that eliminates that. All right, fine.
Yeah, I think they were trying to get Pat in there, but as far as I know, unless he's doing it with me, I've been told. I mean, I've actually been asked by the university several months ago. I did the toddler race for the men's game in December, and the baby race for the women's game in January are the two that I'm doing. So Pat may be there. I'm not sure if he is, but I will be there, and I will be trying to describe the play-by-play of you know, babies crawling as fast as they can to parents who want that swag bag. It's actually a lot of fun to watch. These baby and toddler races are really, really cool.
I can hardly wait. I'm away doing a game, but I will certainly find a way, and I know the video will pop up somewhere over the weekend at either 24 or 47. And give it your best Keith Jackson. How about that? Can you do that? Can you give me one of those with the baby? That would be
You know something? I'll do a Greg Papa, right? Touchdown, Raiders! Although I know he's 49ers
right
now.
Yeah, well, now it's actually not 49ers. I think Papa has gone to San Francisco.
He drags it out. Yeah,
I was waiting for him. It reminds me of Rice-A-Roni a little bit, because when I was a kid, the San Francisco treat, but that's a story for another time. By the way, not that I'm doing this because I'm hoping that one is sent to me, but I was given a shot, Andrew. The Boudin Bakery, legendary in San Francisco. Anybody who's had the sourdough bread or sourdough crisps understands what I mean. They are putting together special 49er cakes. In the form of a cake. It's bread, of course, but in the form of the 49er logo and that kind of stuff. And so if you guys want to send one to me, I'll be more than happy to keep it as long as I don't eat it. So we'll see. That's my attempt with that. And 49ers and Packers, of course, the late game on Sunday, our time. I think they kick at 3. Actually, I know when they kick. They kick at 3:40 from Levi's. All right, I want to ask you one thing about the women's team, Andrew, and I have a great affinity for it. I got my start with the women's team back in the 70s, and I mentioned this, the old South Gym, which is the women's gym now, it used to be such that people would be playing pickup games, and the team would have to come out and very nicely remind folks that they had a game that night, so you need to get off the court so they could sweep it and get ready. I look at that from the late 70s to now, and I understand how far they've come. I know they still have a ways to go as far as getting crowds out there, but you're around the program, and I would say, as you have referenced, they are more than worth your time and the minimal amount of money it takes to go watch the women play. I hope more people do come out. It would be great to see crowds, Andrew. And we see across the country at some of the women's hotbeds, right? It would be terrific to see it here, wouldn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. In addition to them obviously having a really good season, they're just, you know, delightful people to be around. And I'm not saying that, you know, other programs and other people aren't. I'm just saying, you know, they are appreciative, you know, whenever we stop by, you know, having them in studio or going to a practice or, you know, I mean, just the acknowledgement when they just even recognize the crowd after a game. And they realize it. I mean, Fresno State is not a, you know, is not a national powerhouse, you know, in women's basketball. But having said that, this program does have a lot of history, and to quote Jeff Tedford, a lot of pride and tradition. They've never won an NCAA tournament game, but, I mean, again, they went to 7 straight NCAA tournaments. And within the last, you know, 10 to 15 years, you've had some of the best players to ever come through the Fresno State women's basketball program, Jaleesa Ross being the all-time leading scorer, Candace White, who recently graduated, you know, is the third leading scorer in program history. And, you know, she was a terrific player for her four-year career. Begofaz Davalos, ended up transferring to Duke, but she was the defensive player of the year in the conference for two consecutive years. And again, I mean, the Cavender twins, assuming that they stay for all 4 years, will probably break a ton of records, as well. I mean, and not to discount Matty Utti, who I just mentioned, who, could potentially be the conference player of the year this year. So there are a lot of reasons to go and support this program. Most notably because, and I love this, and you and I have talked about this before, Tony, what's great about basketball in the conference is when the men's team is on the road, with the exception of doubleheaders, non-conference play is always a little bit different, but especially in conference play, when the men's team is on the road, the women's team is at home. And so if you happen to be a fan of Fresno State basketball, and let's say you're a Fresno State men's basketball season ticket holder, well, what are you going to be doing on Saturday? There are no NFL games this Saturday. The two conference championship games are on Sunday. And so this Saturday and next Wednesday, you have a chance to go and watch the women's team. Because, again, if you're a fan of Fresno State basketball, why not go see a first-place team when there literally is no competition there? So, yeah, there are a ton of reasons to go watch the women play. And, again, they're in first place. So,
I agree. I like it even more when the men are playing on Tuesdays, the women can get their own stage on Wednesday. Sometimes going head-to-head, if the men are playing well, that becomes competition. I understand the premise. By the way, I will mention to the Karina Clays, the Wendy Martells, the Yvette Roberts. Yvette Roberts, a terrific player out of the Union. They really are part of that legacy that set a standard that has continued, and I do hope they have great success, that's for sure. I always think about Tara Vandeveer, the coach, the legendary coach now at Stanford for the women, still there, incidentally, coming in here in 1988 with what was her freshman squad that ended up winning national titles, coming in here and playing a Fresno State team and almost being beaten by the Bulldogs and having her on the post game. Both Tara and I were younger, substantially younger, that she still looks great, incidentally. Me, that's a whole different story, Andrew. But she talked about Yvette Roberts, and she said, you know what? I'm going to show all my players the game film because Yvette Roberts shows how you play this game. You don't merely go after the ball. You attack the ball. When you rebound the way Yvette. I thought it was the best compliment from somebody who was going to coach, as she did, national champions, to be able to say that this local player here, Yvette Roberts, was one of the best she had seen. And, boy, it seems like just yesterday, and that was probably 1988, which wasn't yesterday. All right, for the men. The question about, and Q brought it up yesterday, Andrew, I've said three in three nights. Is it going to realistically have to be four in four nights? When you look at this, the top five are the ones that get a bye because all 11 teams, of course, are going. I told you I was in favor of just having eight. They decided they were going to do it, and they changed their mind a couple of years ago, which might work to Fresno State's favor at some point.
Right.
But right now, you know, San Diego State, UNLV, New Mexico, Nevada, those four are very likely to stay in those top four slots. But when you get to Utah State, who has been disappointing so far this year, some of it is injury, Utah State 3-3, Colorado State 3-3, Air Force 3-3, Boise State 3-4, then San Jose State 2-5, the Bulldogs at 1-5. Let's take Wyoming off the list at 0-7, so they're going to be in the bottom tier. Can the Bulldogs find a way to get past Utah State, Colorado State, Air Force, Boise State, and San Jose State with a more favorable schedule the rest of the way to get into that bye in the first round or out of the play-in anyway?
I don't know, Tony, because my hunch is that Utah State is going to get it, and if not Utah State, possibly Air Force, which is playing really well also. It's going to be tough because the Mountain West has some really strong teams this year, and as of right now, Fresno State is not one of those teams. Now, we saw in the years of Tyler Johnson with a program rattled off, I forget the specific number, but I think they rattled off like nine conference wins in a row, I want to say, and had a really strong – that would have been Rodney Terry's
2015
year.
Third
year maybe. But they had a really, really good surge in conference play. And again, as you said, there's no reason why the Bulldogs can't do that, especially with the schedule getting a little bit easier. But it's going to be tough, I think, to get past Utah State and or Air Force. So at this juncture, I'm anticipating that Fresno State will have to potentially play four games at the Mountain West tournament. But again, you never know how the season's going to play out. But based on what I've seen, right now, and again, they're starting off in a hole, which is kind of tough. So I don't know. I don't know if right now they're going to be able to pass Utah State or Air Force. I don't know.
The last thing, and you brought up Jordan Campbell, and in a way, even though it's just been a very short stay so far as a player at Fresno State because the eligibility stuff wasn't cleared up until this month, he is kind of representative to me of what's going on with this team. We have seen, particularly in what happened the other night, the good part of his game. We also have seen him a bit out of control and certainly inconsistent. And, Andrew, that kind of describes this team, the bursts of real positivity and then head-scratching play. And I've said it over and over again, not just game to game, but within the confines of a game itself. In a 3 or 4 minute stretch, you see this Bulldog team and they are exhilarating. And then the next 3 or 4 minutes, they're as frustrating as they were exhilarating. Can this team be any more than the team nobody wants to play in March? What I mean is it most realistic to say, unless there's a coalescence here big time in the next month plus, that they will go in as that nightmare matchup that can beat anybody, but realistically asking them to string together 3 or 4 wins just doesn't seem to be plausible right now?
Yes, I think that's the perfect way to look at it. If you can't be, you know, the team to beat, the team that, you know, is the best team in the conference with, you know, a target on your back, then the next best place to be is a team that has nothing to lose. Because if the expectations are low and everybody thinks that they could just walk all over you, then you become an incredibly dangerous team because you're going to literally throw the kitchen sink at it. And if you don't win, you don't win. But if you do win, then all of a sudden it's, okay, now we got to take these guys seriously. So I think right now, having played, you know, 6 freshmen this season, you know, not getting consistent production out of the seniors and dealing with all the injuries that the Bulldogs have dealt with, it's really got to be trying on the coaching staff to, you know, to find a way. And Coach Hudson has said this repeatedly. He hasn't lost faith. You know, he hasn't lost confidence, but it's got to be tough to impart that to the players, you know, because with every loss, I mean, being 1-5 at conference, you know, to still hear and still be told that you're a good team, it's tough to believe that at this point. And even with some of the great performances, I mean, Jarrett Hyder's got, what, 4 20-point games. I think Orlando Robinson has 3 20-point games, you know, as freshmen, which is pretty great. New Williams had that stretch where he was averaging like 25 a game for 4 straight games. It's really tough, you know, to feel good about yourselves when all the work that you put in isn't translating to the end of games. And so if I'm Coach Hudson, if I'm the players right now, you know, the best thing to try and do, as cliche as it sounds, is to block out all the noise, you know, not read anything, not listen to anything in the, you know, the newspaper or on TV or even, you know, what we're saying right now. Just go out and just show that you guys can play together as a team and you guys can get it done. As Rodney Terry used to say, you got to play hard for 40 minutes. Fresno State didn't do that against UC Riverside, didn't do that against San Francisco, because otherwise you wouldn't have blown those huge leads with just a few minutes to go in the San Francisco game, you know, 20-point lead with about 10 minutes to go in the Riverside game. I do think that the Bulldogs will have a much better record by the time the season is over, but based on what we've seen so far this season, it takes time to develop chemistry, you know, both on and off the court. It also takes time, you know, to really figure out where your strongest assets are. And I think right now we're seeing the Bulldogs kind of work through that. And the results aren't there, but you never know. They could be there in a couple weeks.
We'll see what happens. Look forward to the weekend. Paul and Q will be in Laramie and then around the bend midweek in Port Collins. Also look forward to the Insider on Sunday, Andrew, 6 o'clock on 24. Appreciate it, my friend, and you and I will reconvene back in the normal Tuesday slot for the first time since college football started. That's where usually you are, and I always look forward to it. I will talk to you at 2:05 on Tuesday. Take care.
Sounds good, Tony. One more quick note about the women's basketball team. You mentioned some of the past greats. Wendy Martell is going to have her jersey retired on February 8th, so that's another reason to go check out the women's basketball team.
Great player out of Bakersfield, one of the nicest people on the planet, and one that had she played when the three-point line was more in vogue, I can imagine the scoring record she would have set, that's for sure. Andrew, appreciate it. I'll be watching on Sunday. Take care. We'll see you.
Sounds good, Tony. See ya.
All right, guys. Andrew Martin, we'll take a break. Come back with Daryl. Want to talk more Bulldog basketball with him. I don't know if we'll get to the NBA or not. Beginning next week, Thursdays will be back to basketball Thursdays. I will tell you, the last 5 years, it's been a lot more fun when we have wandered into the NBA. This year, oddly enough, not so much. See, I wonder why that is. All right, we'll take a break on 50,000 Watt 940 ESPN. Back 2:39 Bulldog Hour to 3 o'clock. It'll be time for CRISPR and Gonzo, CGP to 6 o'clock. Lakers off tonight. Fresno State off tonight. Sharks hockey on our stations this evening. And we would like to have the 49ers over the weekend, but we're embargoed when we get to the conference championship games. But we're still going to pay close attention. Of course, television really takes the front seat when it comes to the playoffs and the title games. And so we'll see how it plays out with the Chiefs and the Titans, and then the 49ers and the Packers at Levi's Stadium. We are efforting Daryl. I will ask you, Gonzo, have we found Daryl, or is Daryl MIA at the moment? What is the case, if you can let me? Okay, we have to find Daryl if we will in the next 10 minutes. We will. Otherwise, Gonzo, you and I will have an opportunity once again to jump in and talk Fresno State. I'll ask you, since you are calling Fresno Pacific games and have called Fresno State games in Spanish, you're hanging around a lot of the college basketball world these days. Ask you first about the Bulldogs. I was just talking to Andrew in regard to this opportunity to be in the top five. Hugh brought it up yesterday. It appears that it's going to be a play-in round. Do you see a way Gonzo, Fresno State, from a practical standpoint, can get there in that top five, since it looks like the top four are pretty much out of reach? What about it? Can they sneak into five, or are you saying they are pretty much relegated to playing the first day and they would need four straight wins?
It's going to be difficult, right? Because to get into that top five right now, it's about a two-game, you're down two. So you look at that and you go, can they recover from two games? I don't know if this team can, because of how up and down they are. So I believe that they will be having to play that extra game in the conference tournament.
I'll tell you what, we talk about it. I've mentioned this in regard to what goes on in the National Football League. So many years, it was just absolute locked in granite that you had to be the one or two seed, however it was being done, to make sure that you had the bye week before the playoffs started. And with football, it's even more relevant, as you know, Gonzo, because the wear and tear on the body is tough and having the week off. The 49ers are a prime example. They were a completely different team coming off the bye week into the playoffs against Minnesota. It was obvious they needed that week off. By the same token, I've seen the 49ers as a one seed get blown up by teams like, I mean, the 49ers were the number one seed and lost out of the bye in 87. They were the one seed in 97 and lost, the one seed in 90 and lost. Now, it wasn't always in the first round. It usually took one. But it wasn't necessarily locked in that the one seed was going to get there, but it usually meant that one of the seeds that had a bye would. The counter argument we've seen come up lately is kind of what's going on with the Titans right now. If you have a bye, as I think the Chiefs found out before they woke up coming off of their bye against the Texans, you're playing a team that mandatorily had to have won the game before, so they have momentum, and then you're coming in a little bit rusty, and you're at a disadvantage early on. I guess what I'm asking, if Fresno State is healthy, if they have coalesced to any degree, if they were to win that play-in game, do you say they have enough to actually put four in a row together? Are you with what I said to Andrew a few minutes ago? It really is going to come down to, are they capable of throwing that haymaker and knocking a high seed off, but you do not expect them to be able to maintain it, given what we've seen so far this year?
Yeah, I think given what we've seen against San Diego State now twice at home, Fresno State had a chance. So San Diego gave them the chance to get themselves in the game, one and two, throw maybe that haymaker where you got they were down six with about 6-7 minutes left in the game. Then they made some costly mental mistakes, and then San Diego State just ran away with it and created a double-digit lead. You look at that and you go, is Fresno State in a couple months going to be capable of making that turnaround where a team gives you the opening and you have to grab it, take it, and take advantage of it? I don't know if this Fresno State team has it in them, because I haven't seen it yet. They have to prove it in this conference right now during the season to make me believe that during that tournament, if they win the play-in game, then they get the number one seed or the two seed, whoever it might be, that they get a chance and they're able to throw that haymaker. As of right now, I say no until they prove it to me that they can do it.
The sidebar to all of this, you just brought it up, and I don't think it's rhetoric. I realize that Hutt's relationship with San Diego State means that you're going to have people being very deferential toward Fresno State, rhetorically anyway, San Diego State. I don't think it was just the Aztec coaching staff, however, being politically correct. I think there was a genuine concern that the Bulldogs might be able to knock them off their pins the other night. I don't think it was just playing games in the media. I think you had a coaching staff knowing what Hutt knows about San Diego State and his players, in their players, or its players, I guess, if you want to be technically correct with coaching staff, right, that they thought there was a shot here that Fresno State might beat them. And I'm just curious, since the Bulldogs did hang around in San Diego, and again, I didn't get the feeling they were going to be able to come back, but on New Year's Day, they were within single digits with about, again, 6 minutes or so to go in the game. And again, as you referenced, they had their chances to at least close the gap late the other night. Do you think the Aztecs would just as soon not see a Fresno State team, say, in the second round, their first game? Again, back to this stuff, Gonzo, about the team you play. If you're one of the teams that has the bye, the top five, you know this. You're going to be playing your first game of that conference tourney when that team you're playing mandatorily just won. So they have momentum. Is Fresno State a worry to the Aztecs if it were to be that second round, first Aztec game matchup in Vegas?
If I'm San Diego State, of course I don't think I want to play Fresno State, but it just San Diego State's so savvy. I've like watching that game and kind of watching him throughout the season. They're so savvy in the aspect of these little steals. Like it was against Fresno State. I think it was Robinson had his back to the basket. He was trying to back down his defender. And then a San Diego State player came from around the back, got a steal, goes up, gets the layup. Those little things matter now in conference play. They matter in the conference tournament. I don't know if Fresno State can beat San Diego State. What I would say is, yeah, San Diego State wouldn't want to face Fresno State. If you're looking at the bottom quadrant of the Mountain West Conference and who, as a top seed, you'd not want to face, of course, I would definitely say Fresno State, who has the young guys that could turn it on at the right time.
By the way, Flynn, who had such a fine game here, was just named Sporting News midseason All-American. And so it tells you that the talent is there at San Diego. I'll say it one more time. They have to, in my opinion, shoot the ball more consistently well from both mid-range and three. They have their moments if they're going to make a legitimate run. But as Andrew talked, Gonzo, with Auburn done, you now have San Diego State, the last undefeated team. Do you think the Aztecs are going to go through undefeated? Q said yesterday he thought they would. I think travel alone, one of these times somewhere going to the Mountain States, is going to knock San Diego State down. As much as the opposition, just one of those 20 below nights where you've been traveling, trying to get somewhere to some distant outpost of the mountain part of the conference. I think some way the schedule is going to get San Diego State at least once. What do you think?
It's hard for me to think that, because San Diego State is getting now these mountain teams at home. So they played the tougher part, I think, of their conference schedule away already. And if you look at it, maybe Air Force might be that team that knocks them down. Boise State, you think about it, Nevada is no joke either. But I just, the way they look, the experience they have, the savviness, the everybody knows their role, everybody plays their role. It's no joke that they're undefeated at this time, and they're the only college program basketball-wise that is undefeated at this time in men's basketball. I think they will, but I'm going to go out on a limb and say they go undefeated the rest of the conference play.
All right, if that were to happen, and then they sweep through the conference tournament and they get then a very good seed, keeping in mind that regional competition out west is going to be in Los Angeles, which is going to be a de facto home opportunity for the Aztecs, depending upon, of course, who else might be there. Can they actually make a run, and are you pulling for them? I guess that's the bigger issue. We talk about this with Boise State. In football, it's a different animal because it's a one and off. You got one other time where you have to swallow your pride and pull for the Broncos for the over benefit of your conference. But also in football, there's not a huge carryover when a team wins a bowl game unless they are in the Final Four, which they're not going to be. In basketball, Gonzo, there's this tangible aspect to this, which is the better your conference does in the previous season, the more it impacts you favorably going forward. So you prepared, if the Aztecs are the lead dog going into the NC2As, are you prepared to pull for that team despite the rivalry?
I don't know if I'd pull for the team. I'm pulling for the conference. The more the conference plays well, the better it is for the conference.
That's a hell of an answer. Okay. So what are you pulling for? A San Diego State win and then an illness? I mean, I'm just trying to figure out how you're going to parse those two.
I don't want to say I'm pulling for San Diego State because, again, it is a rival, but you do want to see the conference do well. So I would hope that San Diego State has – if Fresno State's not there and Fresno State's not a factor, then, yeah, you want San Diego State to kind of make that deep run.
Well, that's what I meant.
Better for the conference.
Yeah, I didn't mean at the expense of the Bulldogs. I meant at Fresno State. But that's a hell of an answer, though. I like that. I think I'm going to ask you about very quickly because I didn't get a chance to ask Daryl about it. I will find out where he went. On a milk carton somewhere, I assume, these days. But – what about Jordan Campbell? I got so many emails after Tuesday saying, this guy's killing us. Then I get others saying, hold on a minute. He just now has a chance to play. He is still a freshman after all, and he has tremendous athleticism. Is it way too early either way, or do you say, Gonzo, since you are spending a lot of time calling games these days, that this is a guy from sheer athleticism who will definitely break through once he gets it under control?
I think you said it yesterday where it looked at times he was trying too hard, right? You're barely coming back and you want to make an impact immediately and show everybody what they've been missing. That's the issue right now with me with Campbell. If Campbell can fit and go back into a role and say, you know what, attack the basket when it's there and go after it. Don't shoot jumpers unless you're completely wide open because I'm iffy about his jumper right now. If he can fit the role and go through that mold, then I think Campbell can be great for Fresno State. I think he can be one heck of a player and one of the keys for Fresno State to kind of turn things around. But again, he has to fit the role and understand, hey, we know you missed a lot of time. We know you want to make an immediate impact, but that's not what we need you to do. What we need you to do is fit your role and do as what you're supposed to be doing.
It's a fair answer, and I will tell you this in closing, my friend. As always, I appreciate you jumping in. I look forward to you and the CG coming up, Christopher Gabriel program momentarily. But he plays as hard as Russell Westbrook, Campbell does. And the last couple of games that he's been back, he has been Russell Westbrook, unfortunately. 2 of 14 from the field and 5 of 15. He is not shy about putting it up. I'm not saying his teammates have a problem with it. But I can assure you the coaching staff is saying, Jordan, listen, let's be a little more selective. Q brought it up. If you're missing drives to the bucket and you're missing them because the help is coming over, then if somebody gets the weak side board and lays it in, you don't get credit for an assist. But in point of fact, as you know, Gonzo, it was your penetration that created the double on the ball that left the guy open for the layup on the other side. That's a positive. Casting away from 25 arbitrarily, that is not a positive. So he's got to figure it out. He also has to know when to lay it up and when not to try to be spectacular with the dunk. It's only been a couple of games. I'm sure it'll come. I know this. We talk about in auto racing, you can't teach aggression. You can't teach a guy to want to go 240 miles an hour in the short shoot. You can back him off. You can't teach him to do that. I think with Campbell, he has the aggression. It's going to be easier to teach him to back off than it is teach somebody to be aggressive. Tony, that's my guess anyway.
One last thing. Yesterday at the coach's show, Coach Hutt made that point. He said he wants Campbell to attack the basket. If there's a player on his team that he wants going towards the basket, it's Campbell. If there's a player on the team you want shooting a three, it's new, right? So he wants these guys to understand, play to your strengths, and if you're playing to your strengths, more times than not, things are going to go the right way.
It's why he's coaching, no doubt about it. And he was a very good player, too.
Yeah.
That was not just a good coach. He was a very good player, winning national titles at Cal State Bakersfield. Thanks, Gonzo. Appreciate it. We'll take a break, guys. Wrap it up. Get you ready for CG and Gonzo in just a second on 50,000 Watt 940 ESPN.